All right. So con season is underway. We are less than a month out from C2E2. So what is your pro about cons?
Yeah.
So basically, what do you like about cons? What is it? Matt, let's start with you this week.
I've got a couple of things, but I think probably one of my absolute favorites every year, all like each time we go, is the insane cosplays. I love not just seeing all the different fandoms that are represented, but how creative people get with their costumes. Mm-hmm. You know, for the one of the first years that we all went, you know, it was all the different versions of Deadpool, you know, which is still a common thing, but like, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Seeing cosplays was phenomenal. For me, it's walking through Artist Alley and finding like those indie comic creators and finding a book that you like before the con you didn't even know existed, but it has connected with you so much that you have either devoured it either in the hotel, like still during the convention, or like that's what you're reading while driving back to Springfield, and you come back to Springfield and it's like that book, it could be like a huge graphic novel and it is done. It's pretty rare that I get like that kind of a connection with a book, you know, that just so immediate, but when I get that, it's just, oh, it fills my heart with joy. Tabitha, what about you?
I'm gonna be mushy for a second. My favorite thing about cons, specifically C2E2, is like it feels like I get to take a mini vacation with my friends, which is like not something you get to do as an adult.
Wait, who?
I will murder you in your sleep.
That's how she talks to her quote unquote friends. How do you like that?
When I stop talking to you like that is when you have to be worried. it's when I'm nice to you that's scary. I think it's just a sense of camaraderie for like the whole weekend, and not just between like all of us there, but like you see people like walk up to people and like compliment them on things, and like people are exchanging social media information in the line, and it's just like this giant room full of people who are like-minded, and that is incredibly cool to me.
I try to like end this cold open with like a joke or something like that, but I got nothing this week. I mean, we all just have like really good answers. It's nice.
Aww.
That doesn't bode well for the rest of the show.
Really, it's not.
No.
You better grab that bell.
You're listening to The Geek Awakens with Mitch,
Matt,
Tabitha,
and Lydia.
So we're going to stick with C2E2 for a second. Like I said, we're less than a month away from C2E2. I don't know about you guys. I'm super excited. There's a lot of things that Read Pop is doing this year that return of old favorites, but we've got some new stuff as well. Read Pop has a huge, huge weekend in store for us. In addition to like recent additions like Writer's Block or staples like the Tattoo Pavilion, C2E2 is going to feature SideQuest. Now, they've had little game, like a gaming area in the past, and it's still like this is basically it, but it's like to the next level. It's a place dedicated to play tabletop games, participate in gaming tournaments, LARPing, a bunch more stuff. There are a few game companies that are going to be there, and I completely blanked and forgot to write those down, but like it like I said, they are basically like stepping their game up for this. Brand new to C2E2 is the inaugural C2E2 prom on Friday night. It is sponsored.
Have you not seen that? Apparently not.
Yeah. Like,
tell me more.
Yes. So it's sponsored by Alamo Drafthouse. And basically with the prom, you know, they want you to dress up in your best nerd wear, whatever that may be. And we get to dance the night away. Admission is included with your ticket. So there's that. And then there will be a cash bar, snacks available, that kind of thing. We haven't really talked about it because we haven't had our C2E2 planning meeting yet, but not going to lie, I kind of want to do this. This might be really fun.
I admit, I had seen the announcement for C2E2 prom. I hadn't really looked into what all it included. But.
Yeah. And very little has actually been announced for the C2E2 prom. But I'm just like, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just going to be like a, you know, like a dance or whatever. And that's fine. But like seeing that and like especially older nerds, like once we start drinking, it's weird, man.
That's
and fair. Like yeah. Weird in like the best way possible.
True.
Speaking of Alamo Drafthouse, they haven't announced exactly what they're going to be doing, but they have things going on after the four closes on Friday and Saturday night. That's something that I am very interested in. Alamo Drafthouse and C2E2. That sounds like a fantastic combination.
Yeah.
C2E2 will also hold two award programs. The first is Comic Books for Kids. It recognizes people in the industry who have had an impact on kids in the community, and also the Heroic Awards. Heroic stands for Honoring Exceptional Renderings of Independent Creators, which will feature 11 categories dedicated to indie comics. Both of these sound really cool. Once they announced these, I already was on board for the Heroic Awards, like absolutely going to that. I thought at first, like the Comic Book for Kids Awards, that would be maybe not in my wheelhouse, maybe like things that I maybe wouldn't recognize. But if it's something like this where it's recognizing people, you know, helping the community, also really cool. Mm-hmm. Also here for it. They've announced a ton of guests. They've announced like there have been so many comic guests, like it's kind of sad that like for a Comic Con you see like a dwindling amount of comic book creators at these things, but C2E2 is like hold my malort. So aside from that, guests for this year's con include Josh Brolin, the cast of Rick and Morty minus Sarah Chalk, sorry not Seth, Christopher Lloyd, Christina Ricci, Chip Zdarsky, Chris Claremont, a ton more. Guys, I'm so excited for C2E2 this year. I'm so excited.
Yeah. I feel like C2E2 doesn't do the same thing every year. So like while it feels like we're doing the same thing every year on repeat, we're like getting variations of things. And this year it really feels like they've mixed it up. Especially with like a bunch of the events, mm-hmm. and like you said, the creators, and like I know people were complaining like online about the lack thereof of like celebrity appearances, but I feel like in the last like few days they've just been like announcing stuff left and right, like ha ha ha, look what we got, ha ha.
And like it's like we all have the memory of a goldfish, because it's not exclusive to C2E2. A lot of other conventions have this same problem where mm-hmm. people will be like, announce somebody. Why haven't you announced anybody yet? This is going to be awful. This is going to suck. And then it comes and then they're like, oh my God, you guys got all these amazing people. Like, mm-hmm. this is phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, C2E2 has never been like Wizard World was, as far as like the A-list celebrities. Like, C2E2 is more about all of nerddom, not just the entertainment guests. But C2E2 has always managed a few of the big names. Mm-hmm. You know, they've had Rosario Dawson, they've had Chris Evans, you know, but like Tabitha said, they're not the same ones every year. So it's like, oh, we're not going to get Chris Evans again. No, you're going to get somebody else from Avengers. You're going to get Josh Brolin, who played Thanos. Like, which is cool because you get that same almost, you almost get that same level of guest, but different ones. So mm-hmm. it's not the same guests over and over again.
Yeah. And who knows? By the time this comes out, they may have already announced like 7 more people that we're like super pumped for. But so far, of the guests, like, who were you most excited to see? Tabitha, we already know, but for those listening.
The announcement of Christina Ricci gave me hope and joy for the future, at least for the next month.
Do you want to share what you're going to have her sign?
So, childhood Tabitha, there was a video store in my hometown, and you could buy like movies that they had like put out, nobody had rented, so they decided to sell them. And circa 1996, and this VHS is on the counter, and it's for sale. It's like $1. So I bought it and took it home. It was Gold Diggers, The Secret of Bear Mountain. It is Christina Ricci and Anna Chomsky, and it is objectively not good. It is this adventure story of these two girls kind of in the wilderness, like learning about their friendship and like trying to like solve this mystery. Objectively, I understand that it's bad.
Is now this is what that Kanye West song was based off of, right?
No. Tiny Tabitha wore out the VHS of this. Like, I would put it on just like background noise. I wouldn't even run the sound. And I have probably not watched this movie since I was 16 years old, which is probably about the time that the VHS gave up. I'm still fairly confident I can quote it word for word. I'm going to have her sign that, and she's probably going to be like, okay, weirdo, what archive did you dig this shit out of?
Do you own a copy of it?
I did not until I ordered one yesterday to have her sign.
So I'm fairly confident that nobody else in this room has seen this movie. So you can just pull something out of thin air and we would go with it. But give us a quote from Gold Diggers.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I think Not Seth was the one who asked me if I had thought about what I was going to have her sign. Or like if I was going to have it personalized or whatever. There's this moment where they like uncover this cave and one character says to the other, like, welcome to like my fort. It's like where I hide out and like whatever. And she's standing on this big rock and she's like, this is amazing. And it's like, everybody makes fun of this girl. And then she turns around, she's like, you're amazing. And it's like the first time that Anna Chumsley's character has ever had a compliment, like in her whole life. And like the look on her face of like someone likes me and they think that what I think is cool is like almost heartbreaking. But it's also like, ugh. Straight in the feels.
Matt, who are you most excited to see?
awkwardly enough, also Christina Ricci.
Have you seen Gold Diggers?
No, I have not seen Gold Diggers.
Matt's like, plot twist, it's also my favorite movie.
Right? No. Tabitha and I have talked about this, and I'm excited to meet her, but I'm also incredibly nervous because, like, she's my age. Like, she's a year and a half older than I am. She was a child star when I was growing up, and it was one of those things, like, yeah, it was a childhood crush, absolutely, hands down. Like, I watch Now and Then purely because she was in that movie. You could have told me that Devon Sawa was in Casper and I would have never known that because I was too busy worried about Christina Ricci's character.
You said Devon Sawa.
Yeah.
I, for whatever reason, thought JoJo Sawa.
Siwa.
Siwa, thank you.
I didn't think she was born yet.
Yeah, no.
I was like, even with like the sideways ponytail and stuff, like.
No. So I'm excited to meet her, but at the same time, I feel like it's going to be very weird and awkward because you know that as a celebrity, like, I'm going to walk up there and I'm going to just grin and she's going to know that, like, this has been a childhood crush and it's going to be real awkward and I don't know how I feel about that.
Oh, yeah. She's going to tell stories about you afterwards. Like, you could think that whatever you say is, like, completely normal, but, like, she's going to go to dinner with her, like, celebrity friends and be like, oh, my God, I have to tell you about this guy.
You're not going
to
believe this weirdo. Yeah.
He would not stop talking to me. Like,
and his wife had this fucking old movie that I tried to erase from my memory. Now I have to go back to therapy.
They left their hotel key. It was so oddly enough, I am not looking forward to seeing Ricci. I'm not a Ricci hater, like, by any means. I am most excited about Chip Zdarsky. He is one of my favorite comic book writers. He, like, actually, during COVID, he had even, like, said at one point, like, that he's probably never doing a convention again. And so I was like, okay, cool. I'm probably never going to meet him because, like, the last time he was at C2E2, I don't think I ever stopped by his booth or anything like that. Randomly, though, I do remember we were staying at the Hyatt and, like, we came back from dinner or whatever. This is one of the first years that we went. So I don't even know if it was, like, all of us. And so we get back to the hotel and, like, he's immediately right there. And I wanted to be like, oh my God, it's Chip Zdarsky. But kind of like my rule of thumb, just like with David Krumholtz, this guy is off the clock.
You sure that was him?
Positive. this guy is off the clock. So, like, I'm not going to bug him as much as I want to. And this isn't the first con that he's been back to. He's been slowly doing them more. Like, maybe he started last year. But still, seeing him back doing cons, like, I am so pumped. I don't know what of his I'm going to have him sign. But it's going to be something.
Are you going to try to pull a Scotty Young and interview him?
I don't know yet. I've not put out any feelers or anything like that. But we'll see. Oddly enough, Scotty Young, not on the guest list for C2E2 yet.
I did notice that when I was scrolling through the list.
He must have been like, I never want to interact with that Geek Awakens people ever again.
Oh my God, you're his celebrity horror story. he went home and he was like, God, these people, I was trying to sign stuff and they were all up in my business.
I didn't even leave him a hotel key.
You should have.
We had checked out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Should have stolen someone else's hotel key.
So, any final thoughts about C2E2 before we move on?
I'm just excited.
Yeah.
Same. One other thing that I want to discuss before we get to the pull list. We've been talking about AI a lot these last few months. And there were a couple of fairly big stories that came out over the past few weeks, especially since we've been gone. So, speaking of Chip Zdarsky, this happened in some of the latest Batman comics. So, Andrea Sorrentino, who was a guest artist on Batman for a few issues, was accused of using AI in recent issues. This person named James Leach wrote, in part, quote, first off, there are the usual telltale signs, strange anatomy, errors a human is unlikely to make, the weird hands, Joker being insanely ripped in one panel and wasting away in another. He also pointed out Joker's, quote, wandering nipples. That's a thing. Others pointed out that a panel of Batman kissing Catwoman looked off. So they went to Bing, and it generated results that they say are too similar to be a coincidence. I'm familiar with these panels, with these issues, and I didn't necessarily think that they were connected to AI, but they were. These panels, these drawings, whatever, were definitely weird and out of place. And I don't know if it was a situation of, because it was basically, without going into too much detail, this arc, it's going back and forth between, like, the past, I believe even the past, present, and future. So this, so these pictures in, you know, that we're talking about, these were, like, the quote-unquote future, you know. And just, like, I don't know. I didn't know what it is. I couldn't put my finger on it. But, like, these drawings, I'm just like, this is weird. I do not like this. One way or the other, we don't know if these were actually AI-generated. I do worry that, you know, we've talked about before, like, this is a slippery slope. How long is it until we have, like, a Batman issue that is completely generated by AI, both words and art?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hate that it's seeping into things as small as comic books. I think that's the thing that, like, bothers me the most. Like, okay, you falsely advertised the Willy Wonka thing. Okay, you put it in a movie. Okay, you used it to digitize a magazine. Like, whatever. But, like, to think that you put it in a comic book where, like, that's someone's whole livelihood is that one small piece of art that they got to create, that makes me nervous.
Yeah. AI, it was also recently used to promote the upcoming season of Doctor Who. BBC's marketing team experimented with AI technology to generate text for promotional emails and mobile notifications. BB said.
Who's BB?
I don't know. They've got kids, though. No, that's Bebe. BBC said that the final text went through marketing approval, but there was still a lot of backlash. Eventually, BBC put out a statement that said, quote, "We have no intention of utilizing AI again for the promotion of Doctor Who." Good for the BBC for kind of like being like, hey, our bad. And I don't know. On the one hand, especially like for something like this, which I didn't see the emails, I didn't see the text, I don't know what it said. But for something like that, I don't know if I necessarily hate the idea of somebody, you know, having AI generate some kind of promotional text and then edit it from there, you know, whatever. Is it lazy? Yes. But I don't know that I necessarily hate it. That said, kind of going back to what I was saying about Batman, it's a slippery slope to where then BBC's entire marketing team is suddenly without a job because we've got this chatbot that can do everything now.
Yeah. It feels like it's currently such a hot button issue that feels like a huge screw up on their part to even use it for something like that when it was obviously apparent. Like, we live in the age where everyone is like looking for AI stuff and like making sure, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it feels untimely to do that right now.
Yeah, it's just, it's become, like you said, it's become such a hot button issue that at this point, like, there really seems to be, like, there's basically two camps. You are either, you know, absolutely no AI, or, you know, you're like, yes, in favor of it. Like, it just doesn't, like, there doesn't seem to be any happy medium. And I guess that's okay, but, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like you should know as a company, as like a entertainment, you know, conglomerate, like, you should know which camp you're in, like, from the get go. To add on to your AI story, I happen to see this, Late Night with the Devil movie. Apparently it was discovered that something like three images that are in the movie were originally produced or originally like partially created by AI and then given to the effects team to modify and edit and like use for the final picture. And it came out and there's a whole bunch of people that were just like, oh my God, I can't believe they would do that. I'm not seeing this movie. This is absolutely horrible, blah, blah, blah. The creative team came out that are behind the movie and they flat out said, they're like, this movie is coming out now, but it was made 2 years ago before this was really such a hot button issue when everything was just kind of at the early stages. And they've admitted that one, they're never going to do it again. Two, the final images that you see in the movie are not like the initial generation was AI, but like, what you're seeing in the finished product was absolutely hands-on with the creative effects team. So like, I don't know, in that regard, I feel like they took the best stance that they could, because yes, year and a half, 2 years ago, it was not the centrifugal issue that it is now. But you know, from then to now, yeah, I think you should either know, you know, yay or nay, you know, for especially for certain things, you're either for it or you're against it.
Yeah. And I feel like the last time that we really talked about AI, I probably mentioned the same thing, but like, it just sucks that like AI should be used to do the things that us humans don't want to do so that we can do the things that we want to do. However, AI is doing the things that we want to do so that we are stuck doing slaving things away. Thanks, late stage capitalism. Let's just open up the pull list. What's on our pull list this week? So I want to start off the pull list with actually some kind of breaking-ish news. Vault announced earlier today as in when we're recording, not necessarily when you're listening to this, that Heist, or How to Steal a Planet, I think we reviewed at least the first couple of issues of this comic. It's going to be adapted by Confluential Films. It's going to be adapted by Justin Simien and Christopher Yost. Like I said, this is breaking news, so we don't really know really any other information. If you don't remember Heist, basically it follows Glenn Breld, who is he's a con man, and he gets a group together to steal a planet, just like the subtitle says. This was one of those books I didn't finish. I was bummed that I didn't finish. I'm super excited about this. I love the concept of it. What I've read was so fun. And I feel like something like this will do really well on the big screen.
Yeah. It's also fun to see those smaller publishers like Vault get an IP like this that's going to be full-scale production.
Yeah, 100%, because, yeah, this is, yeah, and this kind of shows, you know, like, yeah, we talk about, like, you know, comic book fatigue or superhero fatigue, you know, like, not every comic book movie has to be,
right,
you know, a superhero movie.
Right.
I mean, that definitely is not.
This is one of those things, too, like, you know, if once it gets to the movie screen, people are going to be like, oh, this is based on a comic book. Oh, it's by this company. And all of a sudden, Vault, in general, like, their entire backlist is open to a whole new audience, which is great.
So, a couple books to talk about tonight. The first one is Cemetery Kids Don't Die, number 2. It's out now from Oni Press, written by Zach Thompson with art by Daniel Irizarry. So, with Pick in a coma, but still active in Nightmare Cemetery, Birdie is convinced that her brother can be saved. With the help of Enid and Wilson, the group goes back into the game, but is it too much for them? Tabitha, what'd you think about this?
So I had to have Matt remind me what the first issue of this was about, but the second I like got back on the right page and remembered, y'all, I don't know how to tell you this. I enjoyed everything we read this week. I don't know who I am anymore. No, like I enjoyed everything we read this week, including this, like, I need to know what's happening. I love the world that they go into, the video game world. My only gripe is still that there's no reason for that contraption to look like a uterus, but here we are. I need to know. Like, I feel like I'm involved. I feel like I'm inside the adventure, and now I need to know.
Yeah. I enjoyed this issue. I am all in with this series. In fact, even though I had it downloaded for us to review, I saw it at my local comic shop IRL yesterday, and I picked it up. This is going to be one of those books that, yeah, I'm going to want the physical copies of. That said, this issue, it seemed like this is one of those issues that on paper there's not a lot going on. It's kind of, you know, you had that really, really great first issue, and now this one just kind of like, it wasn't bad by any means. I really enjoyed it, but I think this is going to be one of those issues that is very important later on. You know, it sets up a lot of different things that we're going to see later on. The ending of this issue was amazing. I felt very bad for somebody because no spoilers. But yeah, seeing this game world and how it's bleeding into the real world, you know, I'm very much here for it. I'm interested to see what's going to happen. What's going to happen with Pick? You know, how these kids are going to, you know, one way or the other, hopefully save the day or fail or what have you. I really enjoy everything about it. I love the art. I love, I think I mentioned this with the first issue, but like not necessarily the character designs, like the human characters, but their video game counterparts. Yep. I love them.
Yes.
I love them so much. I love that Birdie is a bird, you know? And yeah, it's just, it's a lot of fun. It's just, I can't stop saying good things about it. Matt, what did you think?
I have to agree. I still think one of my favorite things about this is that they are in the game world and they are battling creatures and they are going through and they are having a rough time and they are still having a real life conversation about everything else going on in game. And that just, it's so relatable to anybody that's ever played one of those games. Like you're there and you're in a dungeon, but you're having a conversation about, I don't know, like what snack you had or like what's for dinner. Like that kind of stuff is just, it's so realistic. And I love that. They continue to add in those little tidbits that are, you know, akin to gaming like that. Like they get to that end of Pipeland and they have to battle the boss and they have to figure out the mechanics of that fight. And that's what it's like when you go into those dungeons and you meet that big boss and you have to figure that out. So you're trying to, like, they're trying to find Pick, but at the same time, like, they have to, like, logic this out at the same time. And it's just wonderful. I'm on board just like you guys are. This is great. Yeah.
Next up is Nacelle Verse Number Zero, also out now from Oni Press, written by Melissa Flores with various artists. So Garlu is on his way back to his home planet when he learns it is destroyed. He meets Luppa, who tells Garlu that he'll help him find a new home. Along the way, Garlu meets other heroes from the Nacelleverse, Power Lords, Sectaris, Biker Mice from Mars, and RoboForce. This was actually another book that I picked up at my local comic book shop. This came out last week, and I was just like, oh yeah, this is cool. Like, I knew of us talking about it. I, you know, knew that we were going to talk, you know, review it, all that kind of stuff. What I expected and what we got were two different things. I expected kind of like an anthology, you know, like here's like an 8-page story about Biker Mice from Mars. Now here's an 8-page story about RoboForce, et cetera, ad nauseum. But what this was, you know, it was a continuous one story that introduces all of these characters of this shared universe, and it did it really well. What's the word I'm looking for? I found myself cheering for all of these different characters. Going into this, I was like, okay, Biker Mice from Mars, I recognize them. I'll probably, you know, pay attention to that comic book when it comes out. After reading this, I am here for, I think over the course of this year, I think there are going to be four different books that'll each have like a 3-issue miniseries, I believe. So instead of me just being interested in Biker Mice from Mars, which, sidebar, I don't know why they had to make the Biker Mice from Mars as ripped as they did. But, you know, is what it is.
Only the biker mice are ripped, though. The rest of the mice in that world are just normal.
Yeah, they are normal mice, but yeah, they can get it.
This is how Mitch enters his furry era.
I'm not mad. but like going into it, was expecting to just really be interested in that, you know, IP because I'm familiar with it. After reading this, I am now interested in all of these different characters. yeah, they have me hook, line, and sinker with this in the Cellverse. Tabitha, what about you?
So I am not, I'm probably a little less than halfway through this, and I'm really enjoying it. Matt will probably be the only person in the room that understands this reference, but this is giving me the cozy, found family space vibes of a Becky Chambers novel.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
And I'm not, like I said, I'm not super far into it, but it's already like pulling on my heartstrings a little bit, and it feels like a little mini space opera adventure, but with the cozy vibes, and I'm here for it. I have not gotten to the ripped biker mice yet.
Just wait.
From Mars or otherwise. So I will update you on my feelings. But yeah, I love this.
Matt, what about you?
I will have to agree that this is probably one of the best ways to introduce a shared universe that anybody has ever come up with. Like, it's fantastic. It's a great idea. Instead of forcing all of these characters into the same event, you've got peripheral characters that are going through all of the different properties. And that's just a wonderful way to do that. It's a very small thing, but I think my absolute favorite little tidbit from this entire situation is when each of the different universes is introduced, it's done in their logo.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like the Biker Mice from Mars logo or the RoboForce logo, or like, that is just, that's chef's kiss. That's fantastic, because it's not just introducing it, but it's that brand recognition that now you're going to look and you're going to recognize that logo too, which is wonderful. Love that.
Yeah. I'm not for sure if it's something that you saw in the digital like PDF to review, but in the regular comic book, like on the very last page, there's even like a website to go to like get all the action figures. And I'm like, already I'm like, do I get all of them? Do I just get the Biker Mice from Mars? I don't know. But like, but yeah, like Nacelle is going to get a lot of my money. And I'm fine with it. So the last book that we're going to talk about is Rick and Morty Super Spring Break Special Number 1, written by James Osmus and Jim Festanti, with art by Dean Rankine. So in this 64-page issue, Rick, Summer, and Morty go to a planet where young, sexy vacationers from around the universe come to party, but then they also are vying for Ms. and Mr. Spring Break. However, maybe a race war or a class war breaks out. I did not read this. I had not gotten to it yet. I wanted to. Matt, let's start with you. What'd you think? Why should I read this?
This is awesome. It's ironically my favorite of the two, like kind of sub-source. You kind of got two storylines happening at the same time. You've got Rick and Summer doing their thing, and then you've got Morty doing his thing with the proletariat revolution that's happening, which he's unknowingly started. And that part is wonderful. Like, I like the Rick and Summer thing is just, it's classic Rick and Morty. It's the fart jokes, the puking jokes, the, you know, like they introduce a character whose name is Mark Skidowski, and Rick insists on calling him Skid Mark full stop. And every time he shows up, he's like, oh, this is our friend Skid Mark, we only call him that. Like, that part is wonderful. But like the whole like subplot of Morty and this revolution, like, I don't know why, that's the part that I absolutely loved about this whole thing. It was fantastic. It's classic Rick and Morty, but there's almost more to this one than all the regular ones, even though it's spring break.
Tabitha, what about you?
Yeah, I was not expecting Morty to rewrite the Communist Manifesto in a Rick and Morty titled Spring Break. But here we are. This was great. This was the fart jokes and the bad humor mixed with like this crazy, smart, socially aware storyline where it's like, damn it, Morty, like you were supposed to come here and have fun, not start a revolution. This was great. The last couple of Rick and Morty things that we've read, I have felt like I did not enjoy as much as I have like past things that we've read. This has reignited my love for Rick and Morty. It's the hidden smart humor amidst all the like locker room jokes that just brings me so much joy.
Right. Let's go to trailer takedown.
Let's get ready for trailer takedown.
So we've got four trailers to talk about tonight. I tried to match them up. We've got two sci-fi franchises going up against two sequels of movies that we've kind of forgotten about because they've been so long. The first matchup is Doctor Who versus Star Wars The Acolyte. The trailer for Doctor Who, it's everything that I want it to be. It has, oh my God, is it, it's Bowie, right? It's a Bowie song? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It got a, oh my God, what's the name of that song?
Changes.
I love that song, and it's got like this kind of like weird version of it, and we have a visitor from a cat. So again, my apologies if there's extended pauses. But like, there's.
That cat was giving me my vibe. Don't perceive me as I sneak by to have a snack. No judgments, please.
But like, we see this one part where Ruby Sunday, like they're back in the past. Ruby Sunday is talking about how like, you know, like, oh, if I step on a butterfly, like I'll change the future or whatever. He's like, well, don't. The doctor's like, well, don't step on a butterfly. And she accidentally does. And then, like, instantly she turns into like almost like reptilian.
Yeah.
So like, it's clear that like we are getting just a fantastic season of Doctor Who ahead of us. It made Tabitha chuckle a few times, which we'll get to her in a minute. Yeah, this just is, I need for it to be May right now. I'm just so excited about this. Goes up against The Acolyte. I don't know if you guys have been paying attention, but apparently, like, The Acolyte's been getting a lot of hate. People have been saying, like, oh, it's the worst Star Wars trailer ever, blah, blah, blah. People who, I don't know, are scared of a female main character. Sorry about it. That said, like, I enjoyed this trailer. I think that this could be something that I could get into. However, like we've talked about in the past with, like, Disney Plus, with their 7,000 Marvel movies and 6,000 Star Wars shows, there's a lot to catch up on. And I don't think with this that I have to watch all of The Mandalorian or all of, you know, Andor or whatever, Obi-Wan, all this stuff. But in my mind, I'm like, but you have to,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah. So, like, that means I've got a lot of catching up to do, whether or not I actually need to. But with Doctor Who, I'm here for it. I'm caught up. I'm ready. So, with that, I'm giving Doctor Who 8 points. I'm giving The Acolyte 2. And it is simply just because, you know, Disney Plus has overwhelmed me with Star Wars stuff. Tabitha, what about you?
Remember how I said I liked everything we read this week? I also liked all the trailers we watched this week. I don't know.
Who are you?
I've been body snatched. I don't know what's happening. so I am Q Elvis because I'm caught in a trap. Because I...
That's one of my favorite Elvis
songs. Sam, I've had it stuck in my head for days, and I don't know why, but I am currently caught in a trap.
Our coworker.
Yo, yeah, that's it. That's why. That's why that's stuck in my head. Shake my fist. Because I really want to watch this season of Doctor Who, because it's them bopping through history, which is one of my favorite things. And then I also want to watch this Star Wars show, because now that I know that people are mad about it, now I definitely want to watch it. And there's so much to catch up on. And I know that I don't have to watch these things, because I know that the Doctor Who shows can kind of be watched like individually or whatever,
yeah,
without watching the backstory. But I am physically incapable of doing that. So, again, caught in a trap. Going 5 and 5.
Matt, what about you?
So the Doctor Who trailer was phenomenal. The Bowie song is a perfect choice, because I'm sure you noticed this, Mitch, even if you didn't really catch it. How many outfits was the Doctor wearing in this trailer?
So many. Like, Shooty is like bucking the trend of a Doctor basically wearing the same outfit.
Right?
Like, which, like, I am conflicted on that. Like, on the one hand, it's like, but the Doctor wears the same thing all the time.
Yeah.
Like, a variation if we're in the past and a variation if we're in the future. But, like, at the same time, I'm like, okay, but Shooty makes it work, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the fact that song and the number of different outfits is a change for Doctor Who, for sure, because Doctor Who has always worn the same outfit, basically, regardless. But I feel like, you're right, this is something that Shooty is going to pull off and do incredibly well. I think one of my favorite things about this trailer is, again, we're kind of getting the hint that during Shooty's tenure as the Doctor, there's going to be a bigger overarching plot and story,
mm-hmm,
in and amongst Monster of the Week episodes and standalone episodes and things. Like, there's going to be an overall plot. And I love when they kind of mix that up and do that, so you get something that's building.
Because, like, they reference, and I'm sorry to keep cutting
you
off, but, like, they went back to the Christmas special, like, multiple times in this trailer. And it's like, we've already seen that. So that means that we're coming back to it.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So very excited. I'm with you. I'm ready for May. I'm ready for these episodes to be out there. The Acolyte does look awesome. It looks a little bit like Carrie Ann Moss has unplugged from the Matrix and plugged into Star Wars. Like, some of the fighting and the moves are very similar to Trinity. And that throws me a little bit, I'm not gonna lie. But at the same time, like, she's badass. So, like, to have her as the lead going up against another female bad guy lead, I like that idea a lot. I also like that this feels like it's a little more standalone. I know we all feel like we have to watch everything to catch up, but at the same time, that's just us in our heads, because, like, honestly, you could watch this trailer and apart from, like, the young Jedi training, this seems like pretty consolidated to itself. And I like that. This is tough, but just because I have been waiting for this new season of Doctor Who for too long, I'm going to go 7 points to Doctor Who and 3 for Acolyte.
So with a score of 20 to 10, Doctor Who moves on. It's going to meet the winner of Bad Boys, Ride or Die versus Beetlejuice. Before we even talk about these trailers, let's just get it out of our system now. And let's not take into account the pre-portion of the Bad Boys trailer, how freakish that Martin Lawrence and Will Smith thing was. This is not part of Trailer Takedown, but not Seth has the mic, not Seth take it away.
Wait, what am I doing?
we're talking about that, like, that pre-part of the Bad Boys trailer where...
Their faces were smooth.
Yeah.
Y'all, I don't listen to you in this terms of, like, words you're saying. I just monitor the audio. What? Okay.
Give Tabitha the mic back.
You were the one who had the visceral reaction of, why does your face look like that? And you were like, go back, I want to watch it again.
Yeah. Like, Martin Lawrence looked like somebody who was wearing a Martin Lawrence mask. That did not look like him.
It, like, his hair was detached from his skin. It was very confusing.
Yeah.
So it's like Russell T. Davies, season one of Doctor Who, where Mickey turns into plastic. Like, Martin Lawrence's hair is not that well lined up. It's not that dark. It's not that full. He's an aging man. Let's just be honest. You got wrinkles, guy. You got a weird hairline. Don't try to use these weird beauty filters at the beginning of the Bad Boys trailer intro. Hi, Abed.
Yeah. Any other thoughts with that moment before we go back to trailer takedown?
Yeah, it was like they filmed it with a Snapchat beauty filter.
It was.
So, Tabitha, let's start with you this round.
I'm distracted by the cat. Bad Boys is one of those film franchises that I have a weird soft spot for. It brings me joy. They're popcorn movies. They make me laugh. They make me chuckle. The soundtracks are always one of those things that you can just, like, put on and, like, listen to through the whole thing. Aside from, you know, the very bizarre intro thing that we were just discussing, I really enjoyed this. I like some of the nods to, like, the past Bad Boys things. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. I have now watched this trailer multiple times. And it almost looks too good to be true based on my fears of what was going to happen with this follow-up film. Not even really a remake. My expectations were really low, and now they're really high, like, dangerously high, and I don't want to be let down. So I'm, like, walking a weird wire with Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. I am far more likely to probably see Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice in the theater than I am Bad Boys, because that, again, is just like I'm sitting on my couch, I want to watch it with some popcorn and laugh out loud and not feel judged by the theater. So I'm going to go with 7 for Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, and 3 for Bad Boys.
So I know that I've told you guys this before, but, like, I try to have my scores for the trailers before you guys even talk about it so that I'm not influenced. And Tabitha, you didn't influence me at all. However, I've gone on a journey. I started with giving Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice 9 points and Bad Boys 1 point. But in the course of you talking, I was not listening to you, and I was instead thinking about myself, which is par for the course. And was thinking more and more about these trailers. Of these two, which one am I going to see first? It's going to be Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. I know I saw the first Bad Boys, but I don't think I've seen any of the others. So I don't have that, you know, connection that you have with it, Tabitha. I didn't hate the first one. I just never got around to seeing any of the others. And that part that we talked about in the beginning really turned me off. But
unlike the ripped mice from Mars.
Let's not talk about that. Or let's talk about that later. That's really a good name for fan fiction. So, but I was thinking back on it more, and I'm like, I found myself chuckling a lot at that Bad Boys trailer. Especially like that part at the end where they're stealing clothes from these white trash rednecks. And like Will Smith's character is wearing a Reba shirt and they're like, well, sing a Reba song. And he can't. And that's all I'm going to tell you. The Beetlejuice trailer, it was interesting. We see a lot of the characters that we saw in the first movie. Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice looks exactly like he did in the 1990? What was it, 90 or? Doesn't matter. But like, he looks exactly like he did in the original, which, to be fair, he's in a lot of makeup and he was dead in both movies. So
88.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I knew I was way too young to be watching it when I did, but I didn't know how young was too young.
So like I appreciate that. Like the makeup artist, you know, whether it was enhanced digitally or not, like, kudos. That's awesome. However, here's where the journey gets really weird for me. Of the two trailers, Bad Boys did a better job of being a trailer. At the end of the day with Beetlejuice, we know that somebody died, and we got that one song that, again, I'm completely blanking on.
Say
it. Yeah. Day-o, say day-o. Yeah, that song. We got a choir singing that, and we see, like, the beginnings of what a trailer should be. With Bad Boys for Life? Oh, Ride or Die. Ride or Die. We kind of know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, of these two trailers, Bad Boys did a better job. I'm giving Bad Boys more points than Beetlejuice. And I'm probably not at all going to see Bad Boys. So, when it started off with one, Bad Boys, Ride or Die gets 6 points, and Beetlejuice gets 4.
That is a journey.
It really was. Matt, what about you?
Yeah, Bad Boys is one. I still haven't seen the third one, but the first two are just super fun. They don't take themselves too seriously. They are full of action. It still to this day, it's one of my favorite things about the action movies is practical effects. Like, they still blow shit up in these movies. Like, if a car blows up, they actually blow it up on set. Like, you can do so much with CGI, but like the fact that they still do that for some of these fun popcorn action movies, those are the ones that I really like appreciate. Will Smith, Martin Lawrence, I don't care what you say about them anywhere else in the entire world. The chemistry that these two have as these two characters is almost unmatched. Like, it's witty, it's snarky, it's funny, it's like family. And it's so wonderful. And yeah, this trailer does do a great job giving you the background of what's going to be happening in this movie. Also, it brings back Joe Pants as their boss, who love him, have always loved him as that background character in these movies. I'm ready for this one. I just am. Beetlejuice was a movie that we didn't think we needed. We didn't think we wanted. And I think Tim Burton has shown us that we really kind of do need it and we do want it. The genius of calling it Beetlejuice instead of Beetlejuice 2 is also great. Bringing Michael.
But now I need a trilogy.
Right? Exactly. Bringing Michael Keaton back. What other movies is Michael Keaton going to come back for? Now he's Batman and he's Beetlejuice. What else is he going to play roles
in? Birdman.
The look of absolute disgust that just was thrown across this room. But it is. It's a teaser. It gives you the setup for what's going to happen. We even get the song back, which is wonderful. I don't know. I still need to see more of Beetlejuice. I need a full trailer. Bad Boys Ride or Die. I'm going to ride or die for that movie. I'm going to go 7 points for Bad Boys and 3 for Beetlejuice.
Ooh, it's close. With a score of 16-14, Bad Boys moves on and will face Doctor Who. You guys have points?
Yep.
Okay. I'm giving Doctor Who 8 points. I'm giving Bad Boys 2. While, yes, Bad Boys gave me an idea, like a really good idea of what this movie is going to be about, Doctor Who gave us an idea of what this season is going to be about, but it, I feel like it held back a lot, which is a really good thing. Bad Boys 2, like, it kind of, it was basically almost like a synopsis of the movie, minus maybe the third act. But that said, I mean, it was still a really good trailer. Tabitha.
I'm going to reverse you. That sounded weird. And give 8 points to Bad Boys and 2 to Doctor Who, specifically because I don't have to catch up on shit to watch Bad Boys. I got a lot of Doctor Who between me and that season.
Yeah. Matt, you cannot go 5-5.
I mean, I can, but I'm not going to. At the end of the day, for me, this comes down to the fact that I would be happy if my life would still be complete if I didn't have another Bad Boys movie. I need more Doctor Who. 6 points to Doctor Who, 4 for Bad Boys.
So with a score of, again, 16-14, Doctor Who wins trailer takedown. Let's go ahead and go into gut reaction.
Ow! Gut reaction.
And we're starting off. Matt, you have 2 World of Warcraft stories. You're going to do them both right now, but I'm going to let you choose the order because I couldn't.
To be fair, I'm kind of going to mash them both together.
Oh,
so
fair enough.
Just do this as one story. Kind of because the first one, and they're just very related, obviously, because they're both World of Warcraft. So in the world of video games, everything and everybody is doing a battle royale. That's the new game mode that everybody wants, everybody loves, everybody's doing. It doesn't really fit the vibe of World of Warcraft, but that's what we're getting. They are going to do a pirate-themed battle royale. 60 people. They have set it up so that you will be able to queue up with friends outside of the game, just like if it was Fortnite or Apex Legends or something like that, where typical World of Warcraft, you have to log in, get into the game, join your friends, then go into a dungeon. In this case, you'll be able to meet up with your friends outside of the game and then jump in together. They've set it up where you will play as your main characters, but you won't have all of your gear. It'll all kind of be fresh start for everybody. There's going to be PvE quests in addition to the Battle Royale that's part of this match. Everybody gets loot. Basically, they've said whether you win, lose, draw, you will come out of each of these matches with loot, which is the fun part for everybody. Pirates have always been a kind of background character for World of Warcraft, so it's just kind of a fun thing for them to bring to the forefront, at least for a short time, with this Battle Royale. It's fun. I don't care about Battle Royale, but I have played World of Warcraft, and this might be something that would get me at least temporarily back to give it a shot. That said, apparently I'm not the only one thinking about that, because for a long time, Blizzard has been really quiet about their subscriber numbers. With this new expansion and with the Plunder Storm that's coming, they have noted that they are back up in subscription numbers to over 7 million active subscriptions. When they maxed out, it was a little over 9 previously. So numbers are back on the rise for them. Apparently, the excitement is coming back to the game. Some of the things that they broke in previous expansions, they have basically fixed with newer ones. So they're drawing a fan base back. I'm giving a thumbs up to both of these, things. If there's anybody that's going to do Battle Royale differently, it's going to be Blizzard. And I think they're proving that with this pirate-themed Plunderstorm.
Yeah. I'm giving this a thumbs up. Good for Blizzard / World of Warcraft, whatever, for, you know, trying to not necessarily reinvent itself, but to just make changes to stay current, I guess, stay with the times, if you will. At first, I did kind of want to roll my eyes at the whole pirate theme of it because, you know, like, it was, what, 5-10 years ago where pirates were the big thing, you know. And I think we're by and large over that. However, I've never played World of Warcraft. I didn't know that pirates were, you know, kind of a thing of World of Warcraft. So, like, okay, makes sense. I'm here for it. Tabitha.
Yeah, I have no World of Warcraft. I mean, I have minimal World of Warcraft knowledge. However, I think if I was a World of Warcraft fan and or player, a rehash of the pirate craze is on the rise, and I love a good seafaring tale, so thumbs up.
Do you love a good sea shanty?
I do, actually.
Oh, well, perfect. how about a sea shire?
Your segues are getting worse. So I think we've talked about this before, very briefly, when the original like little tiny little teaser came out for Tales of the Shire, which is a little cozy Hobbit game. We have a new, also little tiny teaser trailer. I guess that's fitting considering they're hobbits. the game is being developed.
Does it get hairy? Like especially at the feet?
Yeah, that's where it gets hairy. Is being developed by Weta Workshop. Which is a game studio. It's expected to be out sometime in 2024. But other than that, we still don't have a whole lot of details. It's just general Hobbit, Lord of the Rings vibes in kind of like a Stardew Valley cozy farming sim. I don't need and or want a Switch, but then I see things like this and I'm like,
"You need?
I need and also want a Switch." So while I really like this and I want to play it, I don't need to buy the device on which to play it for 5 minutes and then give up on it like I do every other video game I start playing. So I'm giving this a thumbs sideways.
Matt.
I love this idea. It's fun. Cozy gaming is a whole genre in and to itself. The Switch has kind of latched onto that genre and just given it a ride, and I'm thrilled for that. Side note, Weta is the CGI company, the special effects company that Peter Jackson started in order to create the CGI for the Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
So this is like a side group of that company that's building this game. So the fact that they're in on it, that he started this, you know, rolling down the hill, I think it's in good hands. I'm going to go thumbs up.
Yeah. I want to give this a thumb sideways only because, you know, I don't Lord of the Rings. I don't really video game. So, like, I don't really care. But what you just said about the company had, you know, had hands in the, you know, original movies. So it's like, okay, that is kind of cool. I'm still not going to play it, but thumbs up. recently, the documentary Quiet on Set was released, and it showed the dark side of many classic Nickelodeon shows. The specifics are way too much to unpack here. But fan favorite Blue's Clues host Steve Burns took to TikTok to try to help people who are conflicted with the allegations related to many of the shows that we grew up on. So Steve says, quote, hey, I'm checking in. Tell me what's going on. Then in classic Blue's Clues fashion, he quote unquote, like, listens for like a minute. And then finally he says, okay, all right. Well, it's good to hear from you. You look great, by the way. giant thumbs up on this. I have not seen Quiet on set. I don't know if I want to see Quiet on set. But I was a little too old to really appreciate Steve and Blue's Clues, but I still recognize the cultural impact that he had and that show had at the time. This is not the first time that he's done things like this, but it's still just like, it's genuinely heartwarming to see that, like, he still cares about his fan base, his audience. Honestly, he cares about all of us. Tabitha.
I do want to watch Quiet on the Set. I feel like I grew up, like, kind of right before most of these Nickelodeon shows kind of took off. Like, I was, like, on the cusp of being too old for things like The Amanda Show and Drake and Josh. But I still kind of, like, watched them, and I got invested enough in the TV shows. And with the visceral reaction I had to Jeanette McCurdy's book release, where it talked about some of the things that are also being talked about in this documentary, I desperately want to watch this. I know it's going to make me angry, and I know it's going to make me sad, but I feel like it took a lot of bravery for all of those child actors to come out with their story, and we've still got a lot of child actors that aren't coming out with their stories, and we are slowly figuring out the reason why. Hush money. His reaction to this, I'm giving a giant thumbs up. There is not a lot of wholesome content around this, because people's reaction are, again, they're visceral, they're aggressive, they're mad that this part of their childhood is just not ruined, but, like, there's this, like,
cloud.
Yeah, over it now. And he approached it in such a great way that kids that were growing up in that time, even though they might have been watching those shows and they were too old for Blue's Clues, that might have been their safe space. And, like, it is so incredibly amazing that he made a safe space on the internet surrounding this terrible, terrible event that we're just now finding out about. Absolute giant thumbs up for him. Like, we need more people to react like this in situations that are terrible.
Matt.
I openly admit that all of this was behind me because I'm old. I didn't know about any of this. I do want to watch this documentary. But at the same time, yes, to have one of these characters, one of these actors come out and be that safe space online when there are such negative reactions is one of those things that we need in this world. So in general, I mean, thumbs up to him, thumbs down to, I guess, the general topic about how this all has come about.
Matt, we kind of talked about Late Night with the Devil earlier, but we've got some more to talk about.
We do. So it opened in the box office last weekend, came in sixth overall with $2.8 million, which for a small independent film is big, is pretty big numbers. But really, the only thing of note is on Sunday, their official box office take for that movie was $666,666. That's the official number that they're reporting.
Now, who is reporting
that? That's a marketing ploy. I won't hear otherwise. That's a mathematic impossibility.
AMC Films Network was helping report that number. So,
marketing ploy.
I mean, yes, probably, but well done.
I mean, clever. Thumbs nonetheless, up. Yes.
Yeah, I have to go a thumb sideways on this because, like Tabitha, I refuse at this point to believe that that is an accurate number. If it turns out that it is legitimate number, then I'm going to start real praying. But yeah, Tabitha.
Yeah, like that. That's a marketing ploy. Like I said, mathematic impossibility. Clever, not possible. I just want to see this movie. So thumbs up.
Tabitha, I'm sorry. I know you're trying to pet the cat. God,
why do you always bother me when the cat's here? What do you want from me?
I'm so sorry. Let's talk about something wicked.
Okay. I am so torn about this. So this is going to be an Bewitched inspired comedy in works at NBC. They're teaming up with the creator of Dickinson, which is the Emily Dickinson retelling. So I'm hoping it's kind of got the same vibe where it's like modernized but still kind of old fashioned. June Diane Raphael is going to headline, so she's going to be effectively be like the Samantha character. They're modernizing it. It is not a remake of Bewitched. It's just kind of got like the same premise, and it is basically an homage to like the TV classics of that time. Basically examining, you know, modern adult womanhood and how even with witchcraft, it's not possible to do everything that was expected of a housewife at the time. This looks like it's going to be good. I am holding my excitement until we know more, or we have a trailer, or we have a release date, or we have additional casting, something. I have for a very long time wanted not like a remake of Bewitched, but like a revival, that I feel like this is going to bring it back. I need them to not name any of the characters Tabitha, however. I feel like I need to call them and be like, hello, for all of us named Tabitha out here.
Do you know what we're doing? What you're doing to
right,
us?
Don't do this to me. So I'm giving this a thumb sideways until we know more. I am just hoping, wishing, praying that they don't mess this up.
Matt.
Yeah, I feel like I just have to go thumb sideways as well, because there is a large amount of promise in the idea and the way that they're presenting it. But until we get more details, more cast, things like that, it's hard to go, you know, one way or the other.
Yeah. Also going thumb sideways, I love the idea of this, but I need to see more. I've got another Doctor Who thing, guys. So, after much speculation, it was announced that former Doctor Who writer and showrunner Stephen Moffat is returning to write an episode for the new Doctor Shutigatwa's first season. So, since they recorded, or they filmed...
It's already filmed.
Yeah. So, whatever. But, not much is known of the episode, but it is described as Hitchcockian. Russell T. Davies offered a three-word clue as to what Moffat has in store for us. Those three words are... Not that. Those three words are antelope, moment, drums. Also, he gave us a lot of cryptic emojis, including the Canadian flag and a stick of dynamite. I'm giving this a thumbs up. I have no idea what those three things could be. Moment and drums do, unlock Doctor Who memories for me. The moment obviously being from the 50th anniversary, the drums being the John Sim Master. yeah, but like antelope, I have no idea what that is. But still, seeing Moffat back, he's written some of the objectively best episodes of Doctor Who. I am here for whatever he has in store for us. Tabitha.
I'm sorry, I was busy taking pictures of the cat. You're excited, I'm excited. Thumbs up, Doctor Who.
Matt.
I'm going to give this a thumbs up for two reasons. One, getting Stephen Moffat back, even if just for an episode. And the idea of Moffat and Russell Davies working together for a Doctor Who episode, love that. And then in today's day and age and social media and all of that to keep this basically under wraps, where this season is filmed and in the can, it's ready to go, and we're just now finding out that he helped write an episode. That's great. I love when you get those surprises, even if it's still before the episode airs. Thumbs up.
Matt, let's talk about Dungeons & Dragons.
So Dungeons & Dragons is going to get a video game treatment. And we know how sometimes these, you know, shifting in media are not so great. But there's really not a whole lot to this other than the fact that it is going to be a delightful life sim done by the creators of Disney's Dreamlight Valley. But Dungeons & Dragons themed, set in the Forgotten Realms universe. I have played a little bit of Dreamlight Valley, enough to know that it is one of those cozy games that will just suck you in and you will play for 300 years. And if you get a Dungeons & Dragons version to that, you can just... I'll see you next year. Thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a thumbs up. Dungeons & Dragons in other medium is kind of started to be attractive to me. The movie that came out last year was way better than it had any right to be. There is a comic book series that's based off of the Saturday morning cartoon. You don't know about this?
No.
So we'll talk more after.
Sorry, I watched that entire series with my dad growing up.
But I have been reading that, and it's one of those things that's like, I don't have the frame of reference because I didn't watch that series growing up. So I don't know if it's like true to it, but it's fun. I don't know if I'll ever get around to playing this, but I'm kind of here for it. Tabitha.
Is it on the Nintendo Switch?
It might be. It probably will be.
I'm going to need a Nintendo Switch. Thumbs up.
Tabitha, what's Jill Biden doing right now?
Living her best life writing cat books. Living my best life writing cat books. So, as we know, the Bidens have a assortment of animals living with them in the White House, including Willow, who is Jill Biden's adopted rescue cat. And she is writing a children's picture book about Willow that will be published in June. It's called Willow the White House Cat, and it tells the story of how the cat ended up living in the White House. The little blurb says, as Willow bounds from room to room, exploring history in her new home, she learns quickly about all the incredible people who make the people's house run. They welcomed Willow with love and care, just as they did Joe and me, the first families who came before us and all the people who stepped foot into this home. Willow is 4 years old and currently the only pet still living full time in the Biden or in the White House. She has yet to bite any of the Secret Service people like the dogs have. So thumbs up for Willow. I want to read this book. It looks really cute. And I love the use of the cat to tell the story of the White House. Thumbs up.
Matt.
If there's one thing I have learned about stories and writing, it's that basically every story has already been told. It's a matter of putting your spin and your perspective on it. And there is something wonderful, fantastic, and unique about telling the story about everyone in the White House and how the White House works from the eyes of one of the cats that live there. That's wonderful. I think it's genius. Huge thumbs up.
Yeah, giant thumbs up. The moment this is on sale, I'm buying it.
Same.
Hands down. So, the Boston Red Sox. I'm going to try that again.
I was like, I don't know them.
The Boston Red Sox is teaming with One Piece to celebrate the anime's 25th anniversary. One Piece Night will take place on August 28th, where fans can take home a bobblehead of Monkey D. Luffy in a Red Sox uniform. There will also be pregame activities, and cosplay is encouraged. Giant thumbs up for this. I've been to a few of the theme nights for, like, the St. Louis Cardinals. A lot of, I think most, if not all, baseball teams are doing these types of theme nights. It's just, it's a lot of fun. It's a way to, you know, like, celebrate different parts of things that you are passionate about. The only thing with this is because One Piece follows a group of wannabe pirates. It should have been the Pittsburgh Pirates that's hosting One Piece Night. Mm. That said, I don't know anyone in Boston, but I need to meet somebody who lives in Boston between now and then, so that I can get my hands on this bobblehead. Tabitha.
I love that the MLB has discovered the intersectionality of nerds and baseball fans, and they're like going for it. Thumbs up.
Matt.
Yeah, this, like, anytime you can crisscross fandoms like this, and obviously One Piece just continues to be a bigger and bigger part of our cultural realization right now. Thumbs up for this.
Matt, let's talk about Saga.
So Saga and Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples continue to do their thing. As of September 24th, you will be able to buy a republished version of volume 1, which is issues 1 through 6, in a 6x9 format. They're going to be redoing all of them, but starting in September, apparently this 6x9 format is very popular with the youths. So they're going to
the youngins.
They're targeting YA bookstores with this new size and release. I don't know. I mean, the single issues will still continue. You're still going to get trades and hardcovers and digital versions, but we're going to get a new 6x9 bound versions of Saga. So, I don't know. I would continue to buy the regular classic trades, but huge thumbs up for trying to reach a new audience. Yes, I know. It's a weird target for Saga.
There's a lot of dick in there, y'all. Like, I purposefully, when we were organizing the comic books, put Saga on the top, would stay out of the reach of the chitlins. Like, I don't. That's a, like, literally the first book on, like, the second page is the spicy scene.
I guess I'd forgotten how much was
there.
I knew that there was some, but I didn't.
I mean, I guess that's one way to learn about anatomy. Alien or otherwise. Call him with your bad self.
Yeah. I mean, Tabitha, you've already started, so where's your thumb?
I don't know. it feels like a marketing ploy to resize these of something that we all, like, I feel like Saga's one of those things, if you were going to be a fan of it, you're already a fan of it. Like, it's been out for that long. Like, I get remarketing it, but is this the right way to remarket it? I don't know. So thumb sideways. Sorry. Matt said to market the youths, and Mitch and I were both like, what?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go thumbs down on this. I have only read the first volume of Saga. I think I might have, like, maybe volumes 2 and 3 of Saga. And I liked the series. I want to keep going. I just haven't gotten to it yet. However, Saga at times is very adult. And so while on the one hand, I like the idea of them resizing it, you know, whatever, you know, like, throw a fresh coat of paint on it, get some new people to buy it. cool, awesome, whatever. But, like, I don't know. It's young adult is one of those weird genres where it could mean young adult could mean 17. Young adult could mean 12.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with a 17-year-old reading Saga. I am not okay with a 12-year-old reading Saga.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I just, yeah, that gives me the ick.
Mm-hmm.
Tabitha, you've got a last story tonight, and I'm glad that you mentioned this, because I meant to include this with my stories, but I forgot to. So, let's talk about some mugshots.
So there's kind of a lot to unpack here, and I know you also, Matt, had seen this mm-hmm. and mentioned that you were going to post it, so let's just make this a joint effort. the Marietta Police Department in California has been using Lego heads and emojis to cover people's faces in their posts on their social media sites since about last year. They went viral last week or the week before, I can't remember. After the police department posted a statement about its policy, why the covered faces, they said. And then they said they pride themselves on its transparency with the community, but also honors everyone's rights and protections as afforded by law, even suspects, which is great for them. Because, you know, a lot of U.S. Law enforcement agencies have been doing, like, Wanted Wednesday, Mugshot Mondays, like, just throwing stuff out there on the internet, trying to find, you know, wanted civilians. They can do this, like, legally, but the problem is Lego was maybe like, maybe don't do that. On March 19th, Lego finally reached out and respectfully asked them to refrain from using their intellectual property in their social media content. they said they're exploring other methods to continue publishing their content in a way that is encouraging and interesting to their followers. I mean, good for Lego, like, what a bad rap you're giving Lego. It's clever. It's funny. My beef with this whole thing has always been innocent until proven guilty. But mm-hmm. now you have thrown, I mean, putting pictures over the faces or not. Like, you're throwing people in the public eye. You're giving people trial by the public. And that's kind of unacceptable, in my personal opinion. Kudos to Lego. I'm still kind of on the fence about how I feel about the uptick in, like, sheriff's departments and things posting social media pictures like this. I understand that they're using it as a format to try to capture someone, but again, you're trying them in the public eye before giving them a fair trial, and that feels gross. So the whole thing kind of gives me the ick in the end of the situation, but kudos to Lego for sticking up for themselves.
Yeah. Kudos to Lego, because, yeah, especially if you're trying to protect the suspect's, you know, identity or whatever, there are, like, a million different ways
right.
to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I see what you're saying about innocent until proven guilty, and I agree with that. However, like, it's not... It is a lot different. I was about to say, it's not any different than... It is different. But, you know, like, you've got things like Police Beat that is published in the paper, which... Okay, I'm sorry. Who reads the newspaper anymore? But, but still, it is something that is publicly available that not only will, you know, like, say the person's name, but they will also say, like, this person lives on the, you know, 300 block of West 12th Street or whatever, you know. That, in my opinion, is more damaging than a picture of somebody with a Lego head covering their face.
Yeah.
It kind of lends itself to this whole idea of where we're at with social media and everything like that now, like, where it's like, it's almost like we're kind of like back in the Wild West. Like, we as a society don't know what the hell to do with this technology, even though we've had it for close to two decades now.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a... I don't know. I have to chuckle at the pictures. I Love that Lego stood up for themselves and said, hey, knock it off. I don't know. There are so many facets to this that it's hard to... I don't know. Yeah, there's police beat. There's them trying to get wanted criminals off the street. There's... I mean, everything that we've discussed so far is valid. It's, you know, how do you track these people down? I guess that's part of it too. Is like social media is so prevalent in every aspect of our society. In order for the police to do their job, they're asking for public assistance. Are they doing it in the right way? Maybe not. I guess that's part of it. So,
yeah. I mean, the only thing that we can do as individuals is not get to a point where we have a Lego face covering our real face.
Just don't put yourself in that position.
Can we do that?
Depends on the day.
You're right. So
a lot of factors.
You're right. So on that note, Abed, one of our cats, has been very gracious and has been patiently waiting to sit in one of those chairs because he loves those chairs. So I think I have to kick you guys out. So
that's fair. Know.
Bye.
Bye.
That's going to do it for this episode of The Geek Awakens. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, shoot us an email at thegeekawakenspodcast@gmail.com.
It would be a shame if you didn't follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Geek Awakens Podcast or on Twitter at Geek Awakens.
Theme music created and produced by E. Cannon Beats.
Our logo was designed by Shay McCain.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. We're boldly gone.